Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oil prices rally after Saudi Arabia cuts output. Plus, U.S. regulators prepare to force big banks to boost their capital reserves. And we'll hear from Journal Editor-in-Chief Emma Tucker after her sit-down with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
He said several times, we are ready for this counteroffensive. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be long. It could go in any direction. But Ukraine is ready to start.
It's Monday, June 5th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We are exclusively reporting that U.S. regulators are preparing to force large banks to shore up their finances by fortifying the capital buffer that lenders are required to have for absorbing potential losses. Journal Markets editor Matthew Thomas says that the new regulations could boost larger banks' capital requirements by roughly 20%.
I imagine a lot of people listening to this podcast will assume this is all a result of what happened in March with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and a few other small lenders in the US and the banking turmoil that followed. In actual fact, there is a sense among the Biden administration that banking regulations may have loosened a little too much during the Trump years. I think the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and the other issues we had in the banking system have probably just given that a sense of urgency.
Saudi Arabia says it will cut oil production by 1 million barrels a day, beginning next month. That announcement came at an OPEC Plus meeting in Vienna yesterday and follows previously announced production cuts, which the kingdom said will be extended through the end of 2024. The journal's Benoit Faucon is in Vienna. Benoit, I presume that the Saudis want these cuts to drive up oil prices, which are down on the year. We are seeing prices rallying this morning, but what is the longer-term outlook?
The Saudis are going big, right? They're cutting, apparently, from their spare capacity of 12 million to 9 million. So if these physical barrels really leave the market, and it's not just taking some oil in and out of storage, that should really help prices, mostly in the West, in Europe and the U.S., because obviously the other dimension is the Asian prices, which kind of are very strong Russian discounts, follow a completely different logic. They're really $20, $40, depending on the locations, you know, lower than the international benchmark. So as far as the Western markets are concerned, if the Saudis do cut as they say, then that will really help prices. It will be a credible move.
And Benoit, I understand that this deal came about after a standoff between Saudi Arabia and major oil producers in Africa, who had actually threatened to leave the meeting after being asked to field bigger production cuts. But there are also tensions between Saudi Arabia and Russia.
There is a tension because Saudi Arabia wants to cut as much as possible to maintain prices. They have very high needs for their budget requirements. Russia has lower requirements and it's already selling at a discount anyway in China. And in some way, it's taking more market share because of these discounts. So they do have completely different views of the market, which is why effectively the Saudis are bearing the brunt of the cuts. And the Russians are just watching and saying, thank you very much. You know, you're helping and we don't have to do anything.
That was the journal's Benoit Faucon in Vienna. Attorneys in a landmark environmental battle are seeking a delay as corporate giant 3M and the coastal city of Stuart, Florida, work out the terms of a potential settlement. The deal would likely cover claims brought by hundreds of other cities that, like Stuart, allege that 3M for years supplied them with firefighting foam that it knew would eventually pollute water supplies. Wall Street Journal reporter Joe Wallace explains what a settlement could mean more broadly.
So the backdrop is that litigation involving PFAS has been on the rise. federal and state regulators are both cracking down on the chemicals and have started imposing limits on them in drinking water. These chemicals are known as forever chemicals because they don't break down easily in the environment, and increasingly they have been linked to cancer and other health problems. So this doesn't just concern Stuart, it has implications for potentially hundreds of other cities.
3M has said that the chemicals haven't been shown to cause health problems at the levels being discovered in drinking water. Apple is today expected to launch its first new major product in nearly a decade, a virtual reality headset. That announcement is likely to overshadow new iPhone software and other products that Apple plans to unveil at its annual developer conference. While the VR headset is expected to cost $3,000, far more than rival devices, VR developers hope that Apple's move renews interest in the technology, which has recently faced a slowdown. And eggs are quickly becoming the supermarket deal of the summer. Egg prices are expected to return to historic averages in the coming months after the deadliest avian flu outbreak in U.S. history helped to push prices above $4 a dozen in January. Industry officials and farmers say that egg supplies have bounced back as the disease's spread has slowed and as flocks have been rebuilt. According to recent data from research firm NIQ, average retail prices fell to $2.70 a dozen at the end of April. Coming up, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he's ready to launch a counteroffensive against Russia, though he is tempering expectations and warning of bloodshed to come. Our editor-in-chief Emma Tucker just returned from Ukraine, where she spoke to the president, and we'll have that story after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
If Russian President Vladimir Putin had gotten his way, the Ukrainian port city of Odessa would be in Russian hands. Instead, more than 15 months after Russia's invasion, Odessa remains under Ukrainian control, and the country's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, is preparing for a much-anticipated counteroffensive to try and push Russian troops out of more Ukrainian territory. Wall Street Journal editor-in-chief Emma Tucker just sat down with Zelensky in Odessa, and she joins me now from New York with a look at the president's thinking at a pivotal moment in the war. Emma, we're so glad to have you on What's News. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Luke. Thanks for having me on.
So what specifically did you want to learn on this trip and from Zelensky himself?
Well, we're at a very critical moment of this war. It's over a year now since Russia started its invasion of Ukraine. And there's been a lot of talk recently about a counteroffensive. And what we wanted to hear from President Zelensky was, is Ukraine ready for this counteroffensive? Does it have what it needs to be able to make this counteroffensive a success?
And you got some answers to that and other pretty technical questions about the course of this war. But before we dive into that, you sat across from this man for an hour, at the very least, in this one interaction that I've heard. And you went kind of deep with him, talking about psychoanalysis, about the philosophy of leadership, and he followed you down that road. I want to just have listeners hear one clip of what President Zelensky had to tell you.
What can we do compared to Russia? We have to be faster. My age is an advantage I have over the Russian president. I also consider my energy and humanity to be an advantage. There is no time for prolonged emotions. There are emotions, a smile, and sometimes tears, but there is not much time for this, not at all.
Emma, were you surprised to hear this from a president in a wartime environment?
To be honest, I wasn't. I spoke to the president at the end of a very long day for him. Earlier, he'd been visiting a hospital with wounded soldiers in it and handing out medals to them. And I watched him in action. He went into this tiny room in a very basic hospital, clean but basic. There were two patients in there. One of them had his wife or girlfriend sitting on the end of the bed. He'd lost both his hands. There was another man in there whose very emotional mother was sitting with him. And the president showed immense heart to these wounded soldiers and their partners. And I saw him operating and interacting with the people there. Later on, he'd gone to the port in Odessa, where he'd been speaking to officials there about grain shipments and the protection of the port. Odessa is a key military port for Ukraine. So he had been switching from talking strategy to talking to the victims of the war. And he sat down with me, and it was in some ways hardly surprising that at that moment he should start to philosophize about it. I mean, he's exhausted as well, but he seemed to have a broad grasp of what was at stake, whilst at the same time being ruthlessly focused on what Ukraine needs to do next.
He's also clearly given thought to the nature of his opponent, Vladimir Putin, which does sound like it is infusing the strategy that he's recommending the world take in confronting Russia.
Well, this was indeed part of where he started to get very philosophical, was he started to try and ask me and anyone listening to his interview to try and understand Vladimir Putin by comparing him to a cornered animal. This is an animal that's cowering in the corner, and the only way to deal with this terrified animal is to stand up to the animal and not be intimidated by the animal. He's cornered, he doesn't know where to go, he thinks he's going to lose his life, the life that he's built around him, the sort of the riches, the wealth, all these people kowtowing to him. This is what he doesn't want to lose. I think he was trying to get us to understand that mindset in terms of how the West needs to have a very firm response.
And let's hear a clip of what President Zelensky had to say about Vladimir Putin on this precise point.
He must be afraid of the power of the world, so we don't need compromises with an animal. It's necessary to behave with him in a way that he understands. He understands power. If we're talking about the isolation of the Russian Federation in his circle of people, then it's necessary to do it powerfully, not blah, blah, blah.
Did you get the sense, Emma, that President Zelensky thinks the world is doing that, or is he frustrated with what the West is up to?
I think, listen, on the one hand, he's enormously grateful, and he goes out of his way to say how grateful he is for the support he's had. But he's also frustrated. One of the things he kept reiterating was, this is not a war, as he put it, of Russia versus Ukraine. It's a war of values. It's simple, he says. It's good versus bad. And this is where he gets frustrated with the West. He's like, what are you waiting for? Why are you dithering? If we don't settle this issue now, it will carry on. We'll have this instability at the heart of Europe. It's time to really settle this matter once and for all. He showed particular frustration over the issue of Patriot missiles. He was explaining that they only have enough Patriot missiles to provide so much air defense. At the moment, they're prioritizing certain cities, but obviously when the counteroffensive starts, Ukraine wants to be able to offer air security for its troops on the ground. His point, I think, was to say, we can't do both unless you give us more. And it's a fact that the Patriot missiles that they are using are proving very effective. So while I was in Kyiv, there were drone and missile strikes. All the drones were taken out by the Patriot missiles. They are providing very effective air cover, but Ukraine would like to be able to offer it to their troops when the counteroffensive starts. And his message was very clear. They need more Patriot missiles.
You mentioned there being drone attacks while you were in the Ukrainian capital. This is, of course, happening during a real ramping up of aggression between Ukraine and Russia. We've even been reporting on drones hitting targets in Moscow of late. How did that affect your trip to Ukraine?
It was very unnerving. I think it's difficult to know exactly what the Russians are hoping to achieve by bombing Kyiv. One theory is that they are showing Ukraine what they are capable of doing should all these Patriot missiles be shifted to provide air cover for the frontline forces. But there's clearly an attempt to unnerve the civilian population. And as you say, it goes both ways. Although the Ukrainians haven't claimed responsibility, there have been attacks inside Russia on Russian cities. I think this may well be a build-up to what comes next, an attempt to sort of destabilize populations on both sides.
Amid this escalation, Emma, Did the president talk at all about ways this war could one day end? Did that seem like it was a priority for him?
It's clearly a priority. One of the big things they're worried about, apart from anything else, is they need foreign investment into Ukraine. And so long as there's a war going on, that's clearly not going to happen. And although he wasn't explicit about it, he did indicate that he's anxious about a change in administration in the US. I think what he was suggesting was that some sort of guaranteed path towards NATO membership is the minimum security guarantee that Ukraine would accept. He's not expecting membership while the war's still going on, but he does want some sort of written guarantee that would once and for all decide where Ukraine stands in relation to Russia vis-a-vis the West. He made the point very clearly, every single country that borders Russia in Europe that is not either a Russian puppet or a dictatorship is a member of NATO. So his point is, why should Ukraine be treated any differently? And why would Ukraine joining be any more escalatory than any of these other countries that are currently members of NATO and which also border Russia?
Emma Tucker is the Wall Street Journal's editor-in-chief, freshly back from Ukraine. Emma, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks for having me on.
And you can watch Emma Tucker's interview with Volodymyr Zelensky on our website, wsj.com. And that is What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.